The post-war migration program has transformed Australian society, and many of our cities are today extremely culturally and linguistically diverse. But it appears that transformation hasn't made it through to state and local governments in Australia. A new study into the cultural makeup of our public servants has shown that people from non-English speaking backgrounds are underrepresented in the workforce of state and local governments. The problem is particularly noticeable in councils, even in those suburbs with very large non-English-speaking communities. So why the imbalance? Why have these two levels of government not been able to create a more representative workforce? And does it matter? Do we need our public service to mirror Australia's population? Santina Bertoni is Professor of Diversity Management at Swinburne University of Technology in Melbourne. She's also the co-author of the report into public service workforce diversity. Santina, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike.
Firstly, let's be absolutely clear about who we're talking about here. It's migrants, but ones who come from non-English-speaking countries.
That's right. It's first-generation migrants, that is, people who were born overseas, and particularly looking at people from non-English-speaking countries.
And did you look at statistics across Australia?
Yes, we did. We analysed census data from the 2006 census. We looked at the three levels or three tiers of government, federal, state and local, and we looked at the breakdowns for Australian-born workers in those sectors, those from main English-speaking countries, migrants from those countries, and then those migrants from non-English-speaking countries who worked in those sectors.
So is there a state or territory where this problem is more prominent?
No, actually. What was surprising was there appears to be, on the face of it, an underrepresentation of the non-English-speaking migrants across most of the states and territories, except Queensland at the local government level. But the pattern across Australia seems to be that as you move down from the federal public service down to state and local, those sectors reflect the cultural diversity of the population or workforce less and less. So in Victoria, for example, where the broader workforce has 17% of its employees from non-English-speaking countries, in local government it was 11%. So it's quite a gap.
So which level of government was most representative of our society?
Well, the federal public sector, which was surprising, and it probably requires more research to find out why that is. There's a number of hypotheses that have been raised since the report has been disseminated about why that might be, but it's certainly worth further study. It's not a finding that we expected intuitively, because you would think that as you go down closer to where the people are, as that low state and local government would be much closer to the people who are being governed, well, that they might reflect them better.
Can we look at the state government scene? What are the figures there?
The figures there were in Victoria were virtually the same as for local government. Again, 11% of the sector's employees were from non-speaking countries. Now, that doesn't say anything about the particular proportions in individual agencies, and it may be that some government departments represent the cultural diversity of the broader workforce better than others. But across Victoria, state and local had virtually the same proportion, so a big gap.
And local government badly underrepresented?
Across Australia, yes, much more significantly than state government.
And that's puzzling, because you would think that would be the level of government where you would find better figures. Or you would expect to find better figures.
That's right. So there may be policy approaches or programs at the federal level that may be promoting or encouraging greater cultural diversity in recruitment and retention. It may be that because there's larger employment at that level, that immigrants from non-speaking countries have greater opportunities. We don't know. Local councils obviously are smaller employers, but even employ far less than federal government. But even so, individual local councils now, since amalgamations, are still quite large. You know, 500-600 employees are not uncommon.
So we have underrepresentation at the state and local government level. But does that matter? Is that necessarily a bad thing?
Well, it's interesting. We interviewed a number of managers at local government and state government level, and most of them believe that it did matter. And they felt that it mattered because the public service should be open to people of all backgrounds, because equal opportunity is enshrined in the legislation, because an obligation to ensure there's no racial discrimination, or and that all hiring decisions are made on merit. And they felt there were great advantages in the public sector reflecting the diversity of the population that it serves. So there was a consensus amongst the informants that they felt it would be preferable, and they were quite surprised that this was not the case, and felt that it warranted some steps being taken to address it.
Local government understands the challenges of multiculturalism. They spend money on interpreters and translators and programs. So why the lack of diversity in staff at that level?
Well, there were interviews undertaken and focus group discussions with a selection of employees, both migrants and those who were born in Australia. And there were a range of views about what might not be promoting culturally diverse employment in those sectors. And there may be a range of invisible barriers. So there's no particular open desire not to employ migrants, but a whole range of recruitment practices and policies may be indirectly preventing migrants from gaining access. For example, very formal selection processes, the use of key selection criteria, which is quite widespread across the public sector, and a lack of familiarity that migrants might have, particularly newly arriving migrants or those from the private sector, in writing their applications in the appropriate bureaucratic format and addressing key selection criteria, and a whole lot of other less formal barriers that were suggested, such as people on recruitment panels tending to recruit people who are like themselves. There may be indirect discrimination against names, particularly long foreign-sounding names, and also the immigrants themselves may not be familiar with, you know, the way of presenting themselves in interviews and so on.
I mean, could it also be the case that across all three levels of government, but in particular state and local, that that people simply aren't interested in working in those areas, that they don't find it particularly enticing?
That hypothesis was raised, and indeed local government leaders tend to think that they have a job to do in promoting local government employment generally to people. But on the other hand, before this project was started, we, the authors, held a public conference at which quite a number of immigrants and employers and government agencies attended. And the anecdotal evidence from that, about 120 people attended, was particularly from the migrants, was that they did want employment in state government and local government. And they indicated that they had problems accessing it, had problems getting interviews, problems getting their qualifications recognised and so on. So we can only surmise that there's no compelling reason why they wouldn't want to work in the local government sector at this stage.
Just quickly, other problems, though, could be lack of English language skills and things like networking, because these people don't have that backup.
That's right. Language skills were raised, but, you know, we have a situation where for some time now, most of the immigration into Australia comprises highly skilled immigrants who have had to attain a high level of English language proficiency. It's now been raised to an IELTS level of 8, but it has been in the past 6 and before that 5. So, you know, you're talking about quite high levels of proficiency, and they've been rising over the last few years. So we're not talking about immigration now that comprises people who are largely deficient in English skills. So that seems to be problematic. What people did say to us, the informants, were quite often it's the way people speak English. It's accented English or the idiom that they use and so on. Now, these are, you know, cultural dispositions, and it means that perhaps there's a lack of tolerance about diversity, about how you speak the English language. And in terms of networks, you're absolutely right, social networks. But there have been programs designed to give immigrants, skilled immigrants, opportunities to work in a range of contexts that have shown that once the immigrants are in the workplace and working with other people, those barriers very quickly break down.
Santina Bertoni, thanks for joining us in the National Interest.
Thanks, Mike.
Santina Bertoni is Professor of Diversity Management at Swinburne University of Technology in Melbourne. And if you'd like to comment on the makeup of Australia's public service or anything you've heard on the program today, You can leave a message at any time on our feedback line 1300 936 222. Post a comment at our website, abc.net.au/rn/national interest. And speaking of public service, tomorrow morning on Saturday Extra, Joe Gelonesi will be speaking to Gary Sturgis, the inaugural Chair of Public Service Delivery at the Australia and New Zealand School of Government. The National Interest is produced by James Panicki, technical production by John Jacobs. I'm Mike Woods. On Radio National, it's almost time for the news.